Blog Talk Radio.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, October 11th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next, hour and 15 minutes or so to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for the hump day edition of the show. Two guests on today's program. The first is Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. The second, Wes Reynolds, who you all know from Twitter, at Wes Reynolds, and the number one. We're going to chat college football, NFL, NBA, NHL, and then back to the NFL here on today's show. So plenty of things coming your way in a short amount of time. A few things I want to tell you about before I bring on Brian for today's first guest. Over at bangthebook.com, we've got all sorts of game previews rolling out here for this weekend in both college football and the NFL. Of course, we've got a college game tonight with South Alabama and Troy. We've previewed that one. I gave the short straw to myself to write about Texas State and Louisiana coming up on Thursday night. So we've got that game preview as well. But lots of stuff going on over there. College football and NFL opening line reports were posted this week. My college football power ratings have gone up. We'll have NFL power ratings tomorrow from Danny Vorgs. We've got just so much going on over there. NHL picks every day from Parker Michaels. I'll have some series previews for both league championship series whenever we know who's actually playing in them. Of course, we know the Astros and the Dodgers have moved on, but they're still awaiting their opponents. So I'll write about those here as the week goes along over there at the website. Don't forget about the contest that we have going on as well. Cash prizes available for the Daily Streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won. Just sign up with an email address over there. Get involved in those contests. It's a no-risk thing for you, and especially if you're somebody that's new to betting on sports or handicapping games. Not a bad idea for you to get your feet wet, see how you stack up, see how you do with the process of breaking things down without putting any actual money on the line. Finally, don't forget about that promo code over at DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up over there using the code BTB and the number 25, you get a $25 free bet just for signing up. Get a chance to check everything out, see if you like the mobile website, see if you like the desktop website. And then if you do decide to deposit, you'll get a 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. And if you add funds to the live casino, 100% deposit match bonus over there as well. So great opportunity at BetDSI, where it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests coming your way today. The first, Mr. Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Going good. Thank you very much.
Well, we got a lot of stuff to talk about here. Plenty of things going on in the sports world. And I mean, that seems like it's just pretty much the way that things go every single day now at this time of the year. But I do want to touch on injuries in college football. We've got a couple of really notable ones here, one in a major program, one in a group of five program. But I want to talk about this process a little bit here on today's show. And let's begin with the one at the smaller program, Gus Raglan, the starting quarterback at Miami of Ohio. Team starts 0-6 last year. Raglan comes in. They win six straight, make it to a bowl game. Should have beaten Mississippi State, but they fell a little bit short in that one. But he is out this week. At the very least, he's exceptionally doubtful, but I believe what I most recently read, he's out here for this game. So when we talk about adjusting for a quarterback injury, how big is this one at Miami of Ohio in your power ratings?
Well, my number 16 with him in the lineup, last time I looked at the number, it was roughly 9.5. So they're saying there's a 6.5-point differential. That's too high. He's been very good, but keep in mind he was beat out last year to start the season, and it was an injury to the other quarterback that got him in there. So I think that's an overreaction there. He's had a lot more success than the other quarterbacks that they've had there, but. You know, that was a team that had a lot of young players that were just getting better as the season went on. How much of that was the quarterback? How much was it the players just adjusting and starting to learn the college game a little bit better? I guess we'll see from now on, at least in the short term. I don't know how long he's going to be out for, but I think that one is an overreaction. And I'm not a personnel guy. I always ask others who are personnel guys what their thoughts are. And they thought that he might have been worth four. So I think it's about a 2-point adjustment, 2 points of value here on Miami. And you got to realize when you're playing Kent State, a team that if they score 3 points, that's a good game for Kent after Holly went out at quarterback. They really have no options at quarterback to put any points on the board. Miami's got a good defense. It's not going to take a lot in this game. So You may not show it in this game, but future games when you've got to match another team in point scoring, that would be when the quarterback adjustment would take effect.
Yeah, my number on this game with Ragland was also 16, so I'm happy to see that I'm on the same wavelength with you there from a power rating standpoint in the MAC. And you kind of touched on it a little bit, and this is something I did want to follow up with, is that, you know, do you have to treat Ragland being out as an independent event, or do you treat it in the context of the opponent that they're playing? Because, you know, like you just said, they're playing Kent State, who is one of the worst teams in college football at this point. They were before the season. Injuries have made them even worse. So, you know, do you feel like if Miami was playing, I don't know, let's say Western Michigan or something like that, then maybe Ragland is worth the 6.5 that this adjustment is suggesting?
Yeah, I would say so. Anytime you're playing a team that, Western's a little bit better than they are for one thing, so you're playing a team that should be favored in the game, it's definitely different. They could be very conservative, run the football on every play, and come out with a straight-up win against Kent. So we probably won't be able to learn much from this game, but Ragland's had a lot of success there, but I don't think the drop-off is this much at this point.
All right, there's a bigger conference one here that I want to touch on and sort of go through this process with you here, and that's Jesse Ertz at Kansas State. Now, he's out for this week's game. Ertz is everything to this Kansas State offense. He's their leading rusher, obviously their leading passer. He's only thrown the ball 100 times this year, but he has rushed it 65 times for 5.2 yard per carry average. 3 rushing touchdowns, that leads the team. He's got 7 passing touchdowns against 3 picks this year. They're taking on TCU. Now, TCU's not in the greatest of spots here, coming off of a tough game against West Virginia. And we all know what happens when teams go to Manhattan and take on Bill Snyder. Now, this number hasn't been reopened yet. It looks like it was in the, TCU minus 5 range at the start of the week here. But this one has not been reopened since we've seen the Ertz injury come across the wire. So, in that respect, Brian, how much do you think that Jesse Ertz is worth to the line in a game like this?
Well, I'm seeing a few at 5.5 and 6, Chris, Buckeye, UAger 6, 5.5 in Vegas. My original line was 3, so they're making it 3, and I think that's given a lot of respect to Kansas State and the coaching staff down there. TCU's got a good team. I don't want to take anything away from TCU, but after that win over Oklahoma State, everybody thinks TCU's the hot team. They're the public darlings at this point. I don't think they've proven enough yet. They couldn't put away West Virginia last week. Long travel situation for West Virginia, as they always seem to get in that conference. But my number originally was 3. Now it's up to 6. 3 points. He's probably worth more than 3 points, but I think people are afraid of how good Kansas State is. They're good at home. They're a good underdog. You don't want to lay points into Kansas State. So I'm not sure this is what you would normally get for Ertz being out if he's playing for another team because of the coaching edge. Although I don't think it's a coaching edge. Obviously, TCU's coach is great too. So, but the thought of Kansas State as a home dog, I think, is keeping this line a little bit lower. I don't think we'll see a 7 on this. So, this is probably about the peak, I think, is where it's going to go.
Yeah, and TCU, I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying. They played that game against Oklahoma State, and I thought that Oklahoma State was a little bit overrated coming into that game. I thought that number was too high. One of the better bets I've made here this season. And I give TCU credit for, you know, I mean, they had some time to prepare for West Virginia, so that certainly helped them. I give them credit for winning that game. But if you dig into the box score for that one, West Virginia outgained TCU by 102 yards, lost the turnover bell 2-0. That's why they wound up losing that game. They had 28 first downs to 16 for TCU. So TCU, you know, I mean, they scored. It was a close game at half, 7-3. Things opened up a little bit in the second half for both of the teams. But, you know, for TCU here, I mean, it wasn't that impressive of a performance against West Virginia as a double-digit favorite. So I think this is one of those unique situations where you've got a TCU team that people are skeptical of. Maybe Kansas State would have gotten some love here if Ertz was playing, but now I'll be very curious to see what happens with this number as we get one across the market and then get an idea, you know, if the adjustment's been high enough.
Yeah, I agree. I think you learn from this game, or maybe it's a live betting opportunity there's always value in live betting when you're able to get that. So if it's available to you, then by watching the game, you may be able to make some adjustments on it.
All right, let's break down a few of these games here, and a couple of the ones that we talk about in the MAC do have some injury considerations that we will discuss here a little bit. But we'll start on Friday night with Clemson and Syracuse. And the reason I want to talk about this game, Brian, we touched on it a little bit on Monday's show, and I want to revisit it here because I thought of a few more points about the game. And, you know, I think that this is a really challenging spot for a team like Clemson. You have to go on the road to Syracuse. You're laying more than three touchdowns. You know, you've got two big games coming up here in the month of November that you've kind of got an eye on already because you've been so good in so many of your games this year. But you take on this Syracuse team that runs a lot of plays. They're a very high variance team because of that. So from a spot standpoint, I mean, you look at the power ratings for this game, and Clemson's favored by pretty much what they should be, according to most people out there. But this is one of those no-win types of games. Like, if you blow Syracuse out, nobody cares. If you beat Syracuse close, it's a win, and the train rolls on. It's just, how do you think about games like this, especially on Friday nights?
Yeah, I made this line 19.5 here. It is a tough spot for Clemson. They do have the bye week next week. A lot of times, it's if you're normal, anything like I am or people I know, if you've got a week off the following week, you can't wait for that to happen. It's sort of like going on vacation. Your last couple of days of work, you kind of mail it in. That I'm pretty sure that happens with college kids too. The only problem is the Wake Forest game last week, they were in complete control of that game, about 28-0, and let Wake Forest in the back door scoring the last 14 points. I'm sure Dabo Swinney's not happy with that. The last 3 years, Clemson has had a losing spread record on the road each of those years. In the road favorite role, but they actually are 2-0 this year, Louisville and Virginia Tech winners. So maybe it's a different mindset of Clemson, but I would have been against Clemson if Wake Forest had not had that late comeback in that game. So you know he's going to have the team fired up here. But as I said, they've got that bye coming up. Syracuse offensively, they have a lot of plays, but other than that game against Central Michigan where they scored the 41, they've been consistently in the 23 to 27 range, and some against some bad defenses. Middle Tennessee's not that great defensively. Pittsburgh, as we've seen, but they even put up those kind of points up against LSU and SC State, who are very good defensively. So it's a situation for me where I would lean with the dog here, but you know, if I did it, it would not be in the first half, and I do a lot of stuff for the first half. And look at this Clemson defense so far this season in the first half. They allow 3 to Kent, 6 to Auburn, 7 to Louisville, 0 to Boston College, 3 to Virginia Tech, 0 to Wake Forest. When they are engaged early in the game, that defense is just fantastic. And, you know, there's been three drives that have started in Clemson territory, yet they've only given up basically the one touchdown on the season. So this is a Clemson team defensively in the first half I don't want to go against. So if you see the game, you know, go to halftime and you see enough out of Syracuse where you think they may be able to put some more points on the board, it's a possible play on Syracuse. But then again, we go back to how Clemson blew that lead last week. So it'll probably be a game that I'm going to be sitting on the sideline with.
Well, and what I love about this game and what we can illustrate here on the show, and I think that we do a really fantastic job of that, is that this looks like a throwaway game. You know, I mean, Clemson's a 3-touchdown favorite. They're a much better team than Syracuse. Everybody knows it. This number is up to 22.5 at some shops, actually. So more than a 3-touchdown favorite. And it looks like one of those games that you just kind of gloss over. I mean, yeah, it's a Friday night game, so people are going to put action on it just for the hell of it. But there's a lot of nuance to this game, and there are a lot of games like that where you can't just dismiss a game because there are a lot of betting angles available in just about every game on the card, whether it's college football, NFL, college basketball, whatever the case may be. So I think it's just a good example for listeners out there, you know, to not overlook any game because there could be something that you're definitely missing.
Definitely. And there's many times where I'll look back over that card on Sunday and I'll see something happen. I said, why didn't I see that beforehand? I said, that's something that I would normally look for, and I missed out on it. It was clear that that team wasn't going to show. It's sort of like the Massachusetts to Tennessee game earlier, a few weeks ago. Early game, Tennessee playing a team that's going to be out of the FBS this year. And then obviously UMass playing an SEC team. They're going to come to play. And I just completely missed out on it and cost myself a winner. But that kind of thing happens. And I do want to point out that this is a night game as opposed to most of the Syracuse games, which are early in the day. I'm a big proponent of giving an extra half a point or so to the home team for home field advantage on a night game, especially when it's something that they don't do very often. I always bitch at LSU because they should be having night games every week there, and they change it up, and that's really where they get their home field advantage, is playing there late at night, sort of like Florida playing at night. The teams that have a really good home field advantage should be playing those games at night, the Boise games. Boise games in the afternoon are not nearly as important as Boise games at night. The freezing cold, the fans are fired up, probably having some soda pops, as a lot of people like to say. And this is a night game for Syracuse, so we will have to see how this works out. But when I'm looking at these games during the week that are normally played at night, or normally played during the day that are being played at night, I always give the home team a little bit extra in home field advantage.
No, I think that's an excellent point, to be sure. And you know, we'll see if that is something that does benefit Syracuse, of course, in the Carrier Dome, where, you know, it could be a little bit louder than some of the other venues that Clemson, will play in here throughout the season. Let's go ahead and move on over to Saturday here. We'll go to game 119-120 on the rotation order. Ohio and Bowling Green. So Bowling Green, big benefactor of Gus Ragland getting hurt last week as they pick up their first win of the season. Taking on an Ohio team that, you know, the reason I wanted to talk about this game, Brian, with Ohio, a 9.5-point favorite on the road, is that I had pretty high hopes for Ohio this season. I thought that they were the class of the MAC East. I knew Miami of Ohio was there. I knew Miami of Ohio had a chance to be a pretty good team. But I had really high expectations for Ohio coming into the season. Yes, they're 4-2, but that loss to Central Michigan turns out produced better than we thought. But one of the things that's really difficult for me as the season goes along is to maintain a proper perspective about a team that I expected to be better. And then I wind up being a little slow to adjust their numbers, and it starts to cost me. It starts to burn me. Ohio is one of those teams here, or at least they were one of these teams before I made a pretty significant adjustment to them over the last couple of weeks.
Just to go back to the last game real quick for one key point. Clemson beat Syracuse 54-0 last year. So another reason why they may overlook the Orange. Yeah, I was on Bowling Green last week. That was my top play in the MAC. I'm not as high on Ohio as you are. I've raised them 4 points coming from the beginning of the season. I didn't think a whole lot of them. I thought Toledo was a class, and we'll find out if there is any class in the MAC this year, because none of them have really been outstanding. But you have to be able to make your adjustments. A guy I respect told me years ago, you can't marry your preseason rankings. And it's true. Just because a team brings so many players back and you expect it, the chemistry is going to be different every year. And, you know, we see this, and which is why baseball, you see a different champion every year. It's a long season, and chemistry means so much. And we've seen it with a lot of teams that have had success. And I don't know if you had mentioned it, but the Red Sox just fired their manager, Farrell, today. So it's another thing where obviously they didn't have that camaraderie in the dugout. Maybe they just didn't have enough chicken. But anyway, getting back to the Bowling Green-Ohio game, actually Bowling Green has beaten Ohio for the last 5 years. So it's a situation where they've had some success against Ohio, obviously. With a different coaching staff, as Mike Jinks has lost his only game. But that was only a 24-30 game, and they covered that game against Ohio. Ohio, obviously, coming off of that game where they lost to Central Michigan at home, you would think they would come out with a pretty good effort here. But this Bowling Green team, I said before the season, I said they're going to stink at the beginning of the year, but I expect this team to be better as the year goes on. I think they'll be a moneymaker. Last week was the first time they've covered the spread all season long. They played Miami pretty well. Obviously, you talked about the quarterback injury there. The week before against Akron, they were right in that game, they didn't cover in that game, but they played Akron, you know, toe-to-toe there, and So Bowling Green's getting better. Ohio is about what I thought they'd be, slightly better. You go back and look at the teams, you know, they get crushed by Purdue. They did beat Kansas, but they had to go to overtime to beat Eastern Michigan, only beat UMass by 8 on the road. It was a covering game, but I haven't been overly impressed by Ohio. My line on this game was 6.5 Ohio, so I'm leaning with the dog here. It probably won't be a play, but Bowling Green, to me, is a team I'm looking to bet in the future.
Yeah, and I mean, again, too, you need to keep an eye on perception. So, yeah, Bowling Green did get their first cover of the season last week, but they were only a 7-point dog at Middle Tennessee State and then a 3-point dog to Akron after being a 21-point dog to Northwestern in week 3 and a 17-point dog to Michigan State in week 1. So, you know, this is a Bowling Green team where maybe they haven't had the ATS success and they certainly haven't had the straight-up success, but you can see with what's happening in their lines here that perception is changing a little bit about this team. You know, they failed to cover as a single-digit dog against Middle Tennessee and Akron. Then the market inflates the price a little bit against Miami of Ohio. They win that game outright as a 16.5-point dog. So, again, you want to look for buy points. You want to look for some of the trends in the market, so to speak. And I don't mean, you know, how a team's done in its last 10 games as a dog or anything like that. I mean the trends in terms of how these teams are being valued on the odds screen. And it looks like, you know, as you were saying, Brian, there are starting to be some more believers in Bowling Green here a little bit, you know, over the last couple of weeks here. And, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe we kind of see that come to fruition here this week if they are able to cover the numbers, big dog at home.
Yeah, that's been a lot of my success in the MAC is people, the general public's not out there getting on ESPN3 and watching the MAC game. So they just see the final scores. A lot of people don't pay attention to the MAC. They don't know who the players are, and which is fine. You know, you can make a lot of money without knowing who any players are. But they know everything about the SEC, and they know everything about the NFL. They know everything about the Big Ten. They don't know much about the Sun Belt, and they don't know much about the MAC. So you see a lot of over-adjustments being made off of results in the MAC, and there's a lot of zigging and zagging going on where my power ratings move slight. Most of the guys who make the power ratings move a little bit heavier because they don't follow it and they haven't seen the games. So I think I make a lot of hay by doing that. Last week was a double-digit underdog going outright. I've had a lot of double-digit outright underdog winners in the MAC because the lines are just from week to week, they just bounce around like crazy. And like I said, I've made a 4-point adjustment on Ohio on the season. And to me, Ohio's, you said they underplayed your expectations. They've actually overplayed my expectations. So they're probably about now where they should be. So you just keep in mind, you're going to see, and I always say this, if you like playing underdogs, you want to take a look at playing against teams who aren't used to winning. And you find a lot of that in the Sun Belt and in the MAC. You know, if Alabama's playing at home, there's a good chance you're not going to win a money line bet going against an Alabama. And I would have said that about Ohio State, too, until they lost Oklahoma. But it still happens. But when you get a team that's an average team like a Louisiana Lafayette or something, and you find them laying, you know, 7-10 points at home to a team that probably hasn't looked that good, that does not mean that they cannot lose that game because, hey, face it, these teams at the end of the year are going to end up in the 6-6 range, and they're not used to winning. And that's the thing, like with Miami. Miami's got good talent, but they're really not a team that you can count on them. It's sort of like playing the Jaguars in the NFL as a favorite. We've seen it so many times where they just don't show. And, you know, it's sort of like with the MAC. And a lot of good money-making opportunities about playing money-line dogs in the MAC.
All right, let's take a couple steps down on the board here. We'll move to game 123-124 between Toledo and Central Michigan. Early money this week, at least the influential money, has come in on Central Michigan. Maybe a little bit of an adjustment for Cody Thompson being out for Toledo. We'll talk about that in a second. But Central Michigan opened a 10-point dog. This number is now 7.5 or 8 out there in the marketplace. And Toledo is a very interesting team because they're 4-1 straight up, just 1-4 against the number. Been the class of the MAC, at least from a statistical standpoint, for a couple of years now. As you mentioned, a team that you thought was the class of the MAC coming into the season. Now, this is an interesting spot. I mean, Central Michigan's been a bit better offensively than people expected, at least throwing the football, but they're not really turning it into a whole lot of points. They throw for 276 yards a game, only 23.3 points per game. If you can't score with Toledo, you're going to have a hard time hanging with Toledo. So I think there's just a lot going on with this game as well.
Yeah, Toledo's won this game 7 straight years. My number 6.5, so probably not enough to get involved. But, yeah, you're right about Toledo. I came into the season, I had them as a 74. I've gone down to a 72 now. So I thought they were the class. They probably still are. Central Michigan's basically what I've started with, a 61.5 to a 62. I was down on Central Michigan coming into the season. The quarterback has been a little bit better than what I thought. So there's been, half a point adjustment there. Keep in mind, Central has only played one home game all season long. They played, they got the Rhode Island game, non-conference game early in the season, a paycheck game. Ever since then, they played Miami of Ohio. And then they've been on the road to Kansas, Syracuse, Boston College, Ohio. And then next week, they go to Ball State, have their bye, and then go to Western Michigan. So Central Michigan hasn't had a lot of excitement at home. This game against Toledo will bring it out. It is their homecoming game. I never like teams having their homecoming game against a team that's better than them. I think it's an insult to the opposition. Maybe just I'm old school, but that's the way it was. You always scheduled your weak sisters to be able to beat up on homecoming. I think still some of the players on the opposing team, Toledo probably takes that into account as a diss on them. I don't know how they do it now, if it's a scheduling thing or if it's actually planned out that way ahead of time. But Toledo's a team that is good, but this offense, they scored 54 against Tulsa, and we've since found out that Tulsa's defense is horrendous. And, against Nevada, they scored 37, but Nevada has not played that well all season long. They got 20 against Eastern Michigan. They did get the 30 against Miami, Florida, but that was all in the first half. And Miami just took them to the woodshed in the second half. So I haven't seen enough out of Toledo to think that they are nearly as good as what I thought they were. I've dropped them two. We may be dropping them more after this game, but I made a 6.5, and I probably won't be getting involved.
I got this game at 8, so I'm pretty much right out there with the market, so I won't be involved in this one either. But I do think what's really interesting here about this situation is that, for this Toledo team, I mean, was last week kind of the offense bottoming out with just 20 points against Eastern Michigan, or was that a sign of things to come? That's what I want to see here in this spot against a Central defense that's not particularly strong, giving up 4.8 yards a carry, 5.6 yards per play. I'd like to see Toledo come back and go out there and cover a number, and maybe that'll shed some light on what I can do with them the rest of the season, with some tricky games coming up at Ohio. They host Western Michigan in what could end up being, the MAC West division title game. So that's what I want to see. This is another one of those games where I won't have a play on it, at least not from a numbers standpoint, unless I find some other angle I like between now and then. But again, you don't want to discard or discredit any game because there is something you can learn from all the games that are out there.
Definitely. And even though Toledo's on the road, and I'd much rather have them home in the Glass Bowl, we will learn about that this week. And, maybe I just had too high of expectations for Toledo. We'll find out. But that's the good thing about sports betting is you don't have to be involved in every game.
Last thing I'll ask you about here, I kind of talked about it in terms of Ohio and being a little bit, maybe slow to adjust to them. And then as it turns out, it looks like I've over-adjusted because I've got that number on the 5 or 6 range here this week. When it comes to Toledo, I know you said you've adjusted them down a couple of points. You kind of made it sound like if they don't play well against Central this week, this is sort of your breaking point where you kind of give up on that preseason expectation you had. Is that generally about how long it takes for you? I mean, does it take a good 5 or 6 data points before you can do that?
It depends on what team it is. If it was the team that was expected to do really well this year that hadn't proved it in the past, I probably would have done it earlier. But Toledo's been one of the most consistent programs in the country for a decade or two. So that makes me more apt to change. It's sort of like you know what you're getting coming into the season with Toledo. And they're, it's like in college basketball. you know, too many people overreact to returning starters and that kind of thing. But it's Duke. They're the same every year. It's Kentucky. They're the same every year. South Carolina, on the other hand, when they've got really good players, they could be really good, but they don't always have those really good players. So Toledo has earned the respect for me that they've been good long enough that I can wait a little bit longer.
All right, let's flip over to the NFL side here, and we've got four double-digit favorites this week: Houston, Atlanta, Washington, and Denver, and we could have a fifth with New England, depending on what happens with the line movement there. And at some books, New England already is a double-digit favorite. We've also got other big favorites out there. Baltimore's laying almost a touchdown. I would assume Tennessee's laying a touchdown or thereabouts, with Marcus Mariota likely playing on Friday or on Monday night. So we got some very, very big numbers out there in the NFL, and I know that there are a lot of preconceived notions about betting big favorites in professional football. So, Brian, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it used to be that you could just blindly bet double-digit dogs and make a profit. But as we have seen the last few years, the parity is not there in the NFL. As opposed to baseball, which I talked about, NBA and football, you could probably name off six teams at the beginning of the year, especially the NBA. They have a chance to win it, and everybody else is playing for the tank roll. And, you know, there was even talk that the Jets coming into the season, management basically did that so they could tank it and get a good draft pick. Well, none of the players want to tank. The players want to win. And that's exactly what's been going on with the Jets. I don't think they've been overly impressive. I think they played some teams that are just playing bad. But, you know, the best laid plans, as they say. And so we're starting to find this in football also. It's just the way the draft's set up. So you're like Cleveland at this point, I wouldn't be looking to back Cleveland. To me, they look like a team that is trying to lose. It's not hard for the Browns because nobody will know because they've lost so many games the last few years. But some of the moves that they had made and the management has made and even the coaching staff going for it on the 4-yard line when you kick the field goal and the game is tied, I believe, with the Jets last week. So it's just some strange things telling me to not be looking to bet Cleveland. And, you know, you got Houston losing their two best players on defense, and they're still a double-digit favorite against the Browns. So that tells you what you need to know. But, you look at a team like Miami, they're catching double digits against Atlanta. Miami's offense has done nothing. You know what you're going to get out of Atlanta. You're going to get 30 points out of Atlanta in this game. Will Miami score 17? The line is saying possibly. I'm not so sure. But you know what you're going to get out of Atlanta. So to me, I wouldn't want to bet Miami just because the offense doesn't show that ability. Certain teams have those offenses, like Baltimore's offense. It's tough to lay points with Baltimore's offense. You know, they had a breakout game last week. The defense is outstanding, but you are going up against a rookie quarterback on a short week. So you just got to handicap the games a little bit more. You know, Washington's a double-digit favorite. They're going to score a lot of points. Can San Francisco get enough on the board? We will see. But you have to take every single game and examine it. And, you know, the Giants' defense is still very good. Playing at Denver, that offense isn't going to put many points on the board. They don't have any receivers. But how many points would Denver put on the board? So, which is why the total is 39.5.
Well, of course, the nice thing for bettors here is that you don't have to play any of those double-digit games if you don't want to. The downside is if you're in the super contest like I am and you've got a limited number of games, you might have to take one of those big favorites or play one of those ugly dogs, something like that. And then, of course, for people that are in pick'em pools or survivors or something, you know, I mean, those are decisions that you have to make, things that you have to look at there, especially in a survivor pool. If you're looking at double-digit favorites, you know, a lot of times those are just straight-up plays, but you know, still, you have some considerations to be made here with some of these heavy favorites that are out there. Let's look at a couple of games, though, Brian, where we don't have heavy favorites. This line move in game 267-268, Tampa Bay and Arizona, very, very interesting to me to see Tampa Bay take on money early in the week to become a road favorite in Arizona. Now, neither one of these teams have much of a perception this season. We've seen money come in against Tampa Bay several times already this year, but it was a significant move early in the week, and the number really hasn't moved since then.
Yeah, this is – I played Arizona to win the Super Bowl at a large amount, a large number, well, I thought was a large number coming into the season. I was wrong. One of the things you have to be able to do is make – we talked about making the adjustments in power ratings coming in off of preseason expectations in college football. I've seen Arizona play, and Arizona, the coaching staff likes to throw the ball long. And they're not making adjustments on to throwing the ball shorter because they're trying to get those big gains that they got a couple of years ago when they had such a terrific offense. Is because they had a running game and they had a front, they had an offensive line. Right now they can't protect the statue of a quarterback that they have, and so they can't throw the ball downfield. And he continues to try to do that. They brought in an over-the-hill running back this week and trying to change things. I don't think that's going to make any difference. Even though I had took Arizona to go to the Super Bowl at a pretty nice number, I think the line move is correct. I think I don't want to back on Arizona here. I think Tampa Bay's shown enough in their games that they should be the favorite here. And they do have the extra couple days to prepare off of that game against New England. And I do want to point out the teams that are played Thursday are 10-0 against the spread the following week with those extra 2 days of rest. Is it a short sample size of 10? Sure. But is there some reasoning for it? You would think so when you're taking a look at it, extra time to prepare. This, you know, especially would be more important to me if they were playing a non-conference opponent that they don't know very well. But this is not a divisional opponent. It is a conference opponent. But I do know that if you're looking to play this game, Arizona has won the coin toss 4 times out of 5 weeks. And they wanted to receive the ball first, which I don't really understand. I think you'd want to put your better unit on the field first. But anyway, Tampa Bay defers. So Arizona's going to get the ball first. So if you like Arizona, I would say playing them in the first half may be a better play. If you like Tampa Bay, just wait and look for some live in-game. When Arizona gets the ball, you might be able to get Tampa Bay at a better number.
That's a really good point that you brought up there, that Arizona should get an extra possession here in this game, at least in the first half. So, you know, that is possibly a good wagering angle to go with there. Tampa Bay, of course, keep an eye on the injury report, because with Quan Alexander and Lavonte David out the last couple of weeks for them, pretty big loss in the middle of this defense. But like you said, Brian, if Arizona's not going to make the adjustments to exploit what's going on in the middle of the field for Tampa Bay in that 7 to 10 yard range, then it's probably all for naught and probably doesn't really matter that much for them. So, you know, again, looks like we're probably looking at a regime that could be changed down there in Arizona. And, you know, when you see people, because I think Arizona has one of the better home field advantages left in the NFL. And when you see them actively bet into a home underdog, that's a move that certainly stands out to me for a lot of different reasons. We'll slide down one spot on the board here. Game 269-270, Pittsburgh and Kansas City. Pittsburgh with an awful showing last week against Jacksonville. Ben Roethlisberger openly talks about retirement. We know that there are some problems there in that locker room based on the anthem protest a couple of weeks ago. And then, of course, now Roethlisberger and all the things going on with him. Kansas City, man, I mean, you know, this is a team that that's played extremely well throughout the season. I know they hit some bumps in the road there last week, at least from a defensive standpoint, but they're still 5-0. So are you surprised to see where this number is going with the Chiefs now up to a 5-point favorite?
Not at all. I wouldn't want any part of Pittsburgh. You talk about Roethlisberger. If you break down his home road outputs, he's not nearly as good on the road. Now he goes against what could be. I mean, most power ratings have New England number one in the NFL still. But from an eye standpoint, Kansas City, you're going to have to find a pretty good reason to go against Kansas City here. Kansas City does everything right from a coaching standpoint. They don't turn the ball over. They make the right decisions. From a Pittsburgh standpoint, I could not understand. I've been indifferent to the coaching staff at Pittsburgh for a while. I love the way that the team picks up free agents and does their drafting, but from a coaching standpoint, I've been indifferent. But last week, when you are playing a Jacksonville team who's number one in the NFL in pass defense, last in the NFL in rush defense. You've got one of the best running backs in the NFL, and you're in a game where you don't, at the time, you don't need to pass the ball. You can run the ball. You're only down by 3 points or so, and they refuse to do it. That tells me that the coaching staff just had that team unprepared. You mentioned Roethlisberger. He was thinking about retirement coming into the season. Obviously, the losing has him thinking it again. And this is a team right now I don't want any part of. When you have a team, excuse me, when you have a team that comes into the season with high expectations and they start losing, they can go downhill quick. The only positive for Pittsburgh is the division they are in stinks. And even though Cincinnati's playing better ball, Pittsburgh still should win this division, be able to fight their way through it. So they're still a playoff team, but I don't want any part of them here against Kansas City.
Lots of good thoughts here on today's show from Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Brian, what's going on over at the website right now?
We're over making videos once again today. Had some pretty good success. If you've been watching the videos, had some good success. Some nice points being made. Cheetah's back in town, and he will be doing the videos for us again this week. And he just started a new podcast, and I'm sure when he's on your show, he'll talk about that. But we've got a lot of talented guys over there. Ralph Michaels and Marco D'Angelo, the host. Scott Spreitzer has been there. Dave Koch, and a lot of guys that have been to Vegas a long time that I respect, that know a lot more personnel than I do. So I'm always liking to pick their brains. There's guys out there that also do a lot with trends and angles and stuff. I like to pick their brains. Everybody's got their little niche. And if you get everybody together and is a follower of podcasts and radio shows like your own, I mean, you had a guy on there the other day, I believe it goes by Stucky. I was really impressed by him. I know he's been out there on the internet market for a while, but he did an outstanding job and thought of things a little bit differently. And it's just by listening to your show every week, by the end of the week when you make your selections, you get different people doing different ways to handicap, and you can make a good decision at the end of the week. And I just applaud you for the guests that you've had on the show.
Well, and you can follow one of those guests, Brian Leonard, on Twitter at @BLeonardSports. Brian, thank you so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. You take care.
Just want to correct something that Brian said there at the end of that segment. That was Colin Wilson that we had on the show last week. Colin does do his own separate show with Stucky, but Colin was the guy that we had on the broadcast. And, you know, he is a very fine guest as well. Speaking of fine guests, one more coming here your way on today's show. That is Mr. Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. Doing well. How are you?
I'm stressed out, man. I'm very very concerned here about tonight's game five. But, you know, I mean, there's nothing I can control. So hopefully Corey Kluber just goes out there and shoves like he has all season. All right, we got lots of stuff to talk about here. I want to talk about a couple of different markets, and we'll wrap up with some NFL stuff. Cheetah reminded me earlier this. Actually, Ralph Michaels reminded me last week, and then Cheetah and I talked about it a little bit this week. The NBA is coming around very, very quickly here. In fact, they're starting the season a little bit earlier here this year to incorporate some more off days for the players so we don't get a bunch of guys sitting out the national TV games. But hard to believe that we're already in an NBA mindset, man. Are you doing any kind of prep work for the season so far?
Yeah, working on my season win totals. Dabbled a little bit more in the preseason this season, and really a lot more of it has kind of been like second halves or like situational stuff with, you know, some of the games that may have been over, you know, you've had some international games over in China and then games in Hawaii, the two-game series with Toronto and the Clippers. So, you know, just kind of been dabbling a little bit and looking at how the different teams, I think, are approaching the preseason. You know, maybe some of the younger teams, I think, are probably playing their starters a little bit more. And, you know, you saw last night with Chicago and Cleveland, you know, the expectations kind of get priced in even in the preseason. And you saw that Cleveland was a big favorite over Chicago last night on the ESPN game, and Chicago easily won because, I mean, they're playing a lot of their younger guys, and Chicago's not going to be a very good team, but they're playing more of their regulars, and, you know, you didn't see the starters. You didn't see LeBron and Tristan Thompson and those guys, you know, playing late in the fourth quarter. So, I mean, some of these teams, I think, are playing their starters a little bit more. I know the Pacers have kind of done that, and a few other teams, I've seen them, play maybe their starters a little bit deeper into the fourth quarter. But a lot of teams, you know, are working out their rotations and seeing what they're doing. And you've got guys that are trying to make the ball club for some of these teams, so you got to give them a chance to play. So teams approach it in different ways.
So the regular season actually starts next Tuesday night. Boston and Cleveland, Houston and Golden State, TNT doubleheader, a couple of big-time games there. And that one, of course, you know, the Kyrie Irving trade to Boston. He'll make his return to Cleveland. I'm sure he will not get much of a reaction from the fans. He'll get a reaction. It just won't be a good one from the fans in Cleveland, I wouldn't think, based on how everything transpired with his departure from the team. But, you know, Wes, by the time we talk to you again on next Wednesday's show, regular season will have already started. So can you throw out a couple of betting tips for our listeners out there, things to maybe look for early on in the year?
I guess in terms of of win totals, I mean, there's a couple I do like. Just kind of going through these, I haven't done all of these yet, but some of these teams in the East, you know, that are theoretically considered to be tanking, I'm not talking about like the Bulls or Brooklyn, you know, teams that probably, you know, should be near the under of the conference. Some of these teams, I think, you know, they're getting maybe a little bit underpriced because there's really two good teams in the East with Cleveland and Boston. But, you know, looked at a couple of these. I like the Pacers over. I think they're around maybe 32 right now. The Miami Heat, I think some of these teams are going to be a little bit better than maybe they're projected. And I still think, you know, the big guns that know that they're the championship contenders, I think are still going to, you know, I mean, not that they're not going to try, but I mean, you know, there'll be some times where they'll take games off and, you know, where starters will still sit, even with this expanded schedule. So, I mean, you know, you're looking at that, and then obviously the teams that added a lot in the free agency are probably going to be priced really high out of the gate. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win out of the gate. I mean, there's some opportunities, I think, early in the season maybe where the lines are a little high where you can go against them, like a Cleveland or like maybe a Houston or somebody like that, you know, Oklahoma City, teams that, you know, maybe this is just like the first week or two, but where you can go against some of these teams, the prices are going to be high. And then you look at a team like the Jazz that loses Gordon Hayward, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, people forget about him. And I still think that there's going to be some value in them early on because, I mean, it's still a pretty good defensive team. I mean, you look at that what they did last year. Like, the Jazz won 51 games, and the total is around 40.5. I mean, Gordon Hayward is a really good player, but is he worth 10, 11 games? And you look at some of these other ones, you know, the Clippers obviously lose Chris Paul. That's going to affect them. They're clearly not going to be as good. But, I mean, they're down at 44.5. You know, they won in the mid-50s last year. I mean, they're still a little bit better than a 500 team. I mean, so I just – some of these, I think, these win totals have been maybe overdone a little bit in terms of, you know, losing certain players. you know, the free agency, because free agency was such a story this summer, there's a sense to overreact to that. I mean, so, you know, don't be afraid, I guess, to kind of look at your spots where, you know, you can find a little bit of value with some of the overreactions, I think, in these numbers.
And I think another key thing that you were sort of talking around a little bit, and maybe we can state a little bit more directly here, is that you look at the adjustments to the win total market, and maybe our listeners out there don't want to tie their money up until April, you know, with a 6-month investment on a season win total. And I certainly can't blame them for that. If they don't have the bankroll capacity to do that, you know, I certainly wouldn't recommend it. But one thing that you can do is you can use these season win totals to look at some of the perception biases that may be out there. I mean, you look at a team like Minnesota, for example, season win total 48.5. I mean, have they really done anything to come close to a number like that over the last few seasons? No, not really. I mean, last year they won 31 games. Are they really going to be 18 games better this year? They could be, but will they be 18 games better at the outset? You know, will they be a team that's on pace to go 48-34? Probably not. So you can look for some of those perception biases out there and then apply those from the win total market to the daily betting card.
Yeah, and I mean, you see the same thing. I mean, it's not as pronounced maybe in like the NHL, but I mean, you saw the Penguins, you know, lose their first two games of the season. I mean, the Penguins are going to be fine. You know, they're still going to be a contender, but I mean, you get some value. I mean, sometimes these teams don't just start a house of fire. And I think when people saw Golden State win 70-some games, you know, they just assume that, you know, these teams are just going to stay that way. I mean, that's so rare. So you have to look a little bit at these teams that are making big jumps and precipitous declines. And that's also going to be priced in the line early in the season. And you're going to see maybe some of the casual or the public bettors that are obviously going to bet the teams that made all the moves, the teams that ESPN with Dan Turner, you know, that the main networks that cover the NBA, you know, are obviously hyping. So they're going to want to bet them right away. So that's going to give you value on some of these teams.
Yeah, I completely agree. And one other point to make here about the NBA win totals is that a lot of times when you look at win totals, and this is something I really stress when I do my MLB win total series, is that concerns over the course of a full season is depth. And you've got some teams that have low season win totals, but their starting fives, which are going to be fresh at the outset of the year, aren't actually that bad. They just don't have a whole lot of depth, don't have a lot of substitution rotations, things like that. So keep that in mind too, that, you know, you may find some of these teams with low season win totals as undervalued commodities early on in the year. The good teams that have depth are going to want to use that depth early on, going to want to spread out the minutes for their guys. The teams that don't have depth, well, they're going to ride their horses to as many wins as possible before the rigors of the season start to wear them down. So, you know, I think early on in the season, as we're kind of talking about here, you want to look at those teams that are perceived to be bad and probably look for some value on them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're seeing, you know, some of these teams that are in the low 30s, like I was talking about the Pacers and, you know, some of these teams even in the 20s. I mean, you got a young team like Phoenix, for instance. And I'm not endorsing an over or an under here, but I mean, you know, young teams, I think, get better. And you got to keep in mind with like a season-long bet that you're not necessarily dead because a team starts bad. Sometimes teams do get better. And, you know, you have to look at the framework of the team. I mean, you know, the whole tanking phenomenon of what we saw with Trust the Process in Philadelphia, players aren't going to not try to get a draft pick. They don't care. They're worried about their particular job. I mean, they're not going to purposefully lose games. Now, if the roster to where that's going to happen, I mean, then you can't help that. But, I mean, you know, these guys are not going to tank because, oh, man, we can get the number one pick. I mean, I don't think any player worth anything is going to have that mentality. So, you know, keep in mind when you hear those terms in the media of tanking and whatnot, that, you know, players don't buy into that.
Well, let's look at the other daily winter sport here, and this one already is going on, so we actually have some tangible results to take a look at here. The NHL, we've got everyone's played pretty much between 2 and 4 games here thus far on the season. Still very early on, still a very small percentage of the 82 games that we're going to see this year. But, Wes, since we last talked, have you picked up on anything? Have you seen any kind of observations or trends that you could point our listeners in the right direction with over the next week or two?
Well, I think what I'm seeing a little bit more, and I don't know how much it's going to continue, but you're seeing some more totals, I think, in the daily market in the NHL being priced at 6. You know, usually 5 and 5.5 are kind of, it's usually those totals across the board with the rare 6s, but you've seen some teams with put up some really high numbers this year. I mean, you saw the Blackhawks score 10 goals on the Penguins, and you saw, you know, you're seeing Toronto score a lot of goals. Their totals are at 6. The Capitals, I mean, those are the, you know, the Capitals are one of the usual suspects, and same with Pittsburgh, that they're going to have higher totals because they have explosive offenses and star players that can score a lot of goals. But, you know, I don't know if we have enough tangible results to say the scoring's up is going to continue long term, but I'm noticing you are seeing more 6s on totals on a day-to-day basis. And also, you know, you're going to have a couple of the under teams because of their style of play. I mean, New Jersey, I think, has always kind of been an under team. Maybe that's changing now. But, you know, you'll see a couple of these teams that traditionally have low-scoring games, like the L.A. Kings and a couple others. I know Montreal's really started out rough, and they've had a lot of unders, and they haven't been able to find a lot of offense. But, you know, still kind of trying to figure out. I mean, they're doing different things. And noticed a rule that came into play actually last night. It was in the Philadelphia-Nashville game. And Philadelphia was down 3-0 and then scores 5 straight. Nashville makes it 5-4. Nashville scores to tie it, but Philadelphia actually made a challenge. They were challenging that the goal was offside, but with these challenges, if you lose the challenge, that actually gives the other team a power play. And Nashville had scored on a 2-man advantage and made it 5-5. Philadelphia lost the challenge with about 1.5 minutes to go in the third, and that put Nashville right back on the power play, and Nashville converts and wins the game. So that's an interesting new rule this year that I've noticed that, you know, you got to be very careful and be sure if you're going to challenge, you know, not just, hey, take a shot and see if a guy made a catch like you might see in the NFL or see if a guy got a shot off. But, you know, they penalize you if you lose challenges here.
As an aside, I mean, this isn't really related to betting or anything like that. I just want to get your take on that. I just want to know, you know, is that something that you wouldn't mind seeing? I mean, obviously there's no penalty you could come up with in Major League Baseball, but would you mind a penalty in the NFL for it?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I really like necessarily a penalty in the NFL for it. Because, I mean, so many of these things are so borderline now with what's a catch and what's not a catch. I mean, I know that they want to reduce the reviews because, I mean, you're seeing it even more in college. I mean, everything is reviewed. I think it was Texas Tech and Kansas last Saturday might have had like 7 reviews in the first quarter or something. I mean, it seemed like it took 1.5 hours to play the first quarter of that game. So, you know, I don't want unlimited challenges, but I don't know if a penalty would work in like the NFL, because you already have the rules kind of more biased. Even though you're seeing some more unders this year in the NFL, it's kind of a bias against the defense anyway, with the enforcing of the illegal contact rule and the fact that pass interference is already a spot foul. So, I mean, I don't really know if I'd want to see that particularly like a penalty for a challenge that you lose. I mean, they can already take away, or they're already taking away a timeout, so that's a penalty enough.
I'll be really curious to see how it goes in the NHL. That's a rule. I think I read about it in passing, but then to actually see it in practice and to see it, you know, come into effect in the last minutes of a game, you know, is something that I'm sure coaches aren't real thrilled about, but you know, we'll see how it plays out as we go throughout the NHL season here. All right, let's go over to the football side of things here, Wes. And we got a lot of stuff to talk about here, including a lot of double digit favorites. We got four of them on the board, possibly five. If New England gets there, like I said, I think Tennessee is probably a seven and a half point favorite whenever that number opens, as long as Marcus Mariota comes back. Maybe it's a little bit lower, maybe it's 6.5, but still, we've got some very big numbers out there in the NFL market this week. I know you're a derivative guy, which means you've got some big first half lines as well. What's your approach when you got big numbers all over the place?
Well, I mean, some of these you might be looking at teasers, especially you know, I'm sure a game that might get teased down, I'm looking at some of these lines. I mean, when you see like minus 11 plus 15, like at five dimes for Cleveland and Houston, that's obviously a teaser protection deal because they know that they're going to get Houston teasers against Cleveland, and now it's announced that Kevin Hogan is going to be making his first start. It's on the road against a team that's lost two straight games. You know, and although it's against a team that has, you know, lost probably their two best defensive players, you know, still a big line. I mean, Cleveland was in, I think, a really good spot to cover last week and still laid an egg against the Jets. So, you know, looking at these numbers, I think you're going to see a lot of people wanting to tease. I mean, you can totally justify double digits. I mean, when you look at the Giants, I mean, who's going to play receiver for this team now with Beckham and Brandon Marshall out, and you're seeing that they're double digits playing a team off a bye. San Francisco also playing a team off the bye. Same thing with Miami. I mean, three of these four double-digit games are teams at home that are off a bye. So, you know, it's interesting to see if maybe they've overvalued this, and also maybe if, you know, some of these moves earlier in the week on the double-digit favorites, if these are just guys getting ahead of the market, you know, because they know that, you know, your average bettor is probably going to want to pick on some of these bad teams with 0-5 San Francisco, 0-5 New York, 0-5 Cleveland, 2-2 Miami that has not performed well on offense the last 2 weeks. So, you know, I mean, I guess those are my observations on that. You know, we'll wait to see if you maybe see some buyback over the weekend on some of these big underdogs.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's really interesting is you look at that Cleveland-Houston line, for example. It opened 9.5 at Pinnacle minus 05. It got hit right away to 10, and it's pretty much sat there. I mean, the juice has moved around a little bit based on some of the smaller hits that they've taken. We've seen no adjustment to the Kevin Hogan announcement, at least not to this point. So that should be pretty telling about what the market believes in DeShone Kizer. But, you know, that's an interesting one where you saw an initial hit below the 10, gets to 10, not a whole lot of action at that point. You know, you see in that Miami-Atlanta game, Atlanta continues to take on money. Same thing with the Giants in Denver, you know, with Beckham being out, with Marshall being out. Eli Manning went for x-rays after last week's game as well, so he's not fully healthy. You know, we saw money come in and pretty much not stop until the line reached 11.5. So, you know, it is pretty interesting because, you know, as I was talking about with Brian in our previous segment, you know, the old adage was kind of, you know, you're not going to make money betting double-digit favorites in the NFL. A couple of years ago, you did a very good job betting double-digit favorites in the NFL, or maybe it was last year. So, you know, I think it's just a case-by-case basis thing. And when you look at the four games with double-digit favorites, all of those dogs do have the chance to get completely steamrolled.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very hard to, you know, obviously back the Giants here. It's very, I mean, some of these teams, it's hard. I mean, you look, And San Francisco has been competitive in about every single game that they've played. You know, their defensive numbers aren't great, but their defense has actually kept them in a lot of these games, you know, and really kept them from getting blown out at Indianapolis last week. And then they eventually came back and were able to take it to overtime. But, I mean, you can understand why, you know, some of these are double digits. I mean, you know, especially with the Giants, and I think especially more so with Miami, because their offense is just, you know, very, very much non-existent. I mean, they really struggled last week. They were able to do enough to beat a Tennessee team that they're struggling on offense without Marcus Mariota, and, you know, he covers some of their weaknesses on offense with his running ability. But, I mean, this is, you know, it was the opposite of last week when all the games seemed like they were within, you know, there were so many games around 2.5, 3, 3.5, 4 in that range, and now you got a lot of these double-digit favorites. And, I mean, it's hard to lay those. I mean, out of habit, I mean, it's like you don't get rich laying double digits in the NFL, but, I mean, you're basically looking at to say, how bad are these teams really? And a couple of them really are that bad.
You know, I think it's kind of fascinating. You talk about San Francisco. They've lost their last four games. Of course, they're 0-5, but they've lost their last four games by 11 combined points. And they're a double-digit dog here this week because they're playing their third straight road game, second straight early game. So really it's a spot that's influencing the line here a little bit. Also, you factor in Washington off the bye. But again, you're talking about a team that has lost its last four games combined by almost what the spread is for this one game. And Washington's not an elite NFL team by any means. So that may be the most fascinating line of the week for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, I think it is. And I mean, you kind of saw that. We talked about it last week with you know, it wasn't double digits, but with Jacksonville and Pittsburgh. Now, Jacksonville took a little bit of money last week. I think they closed 7.5, 8. It might have been, I forget what the opener was, if it was 8.5 or 9. But, you know, Jacksonville did take a little bit of smart money, but I don't think anybody expected that they were going to win 30-9 in Pittsburgh and that Roethlisberger was going to throw 5 interceptions. So, I mean, you know, They were able to win on a horrible spot, and I said Pittsburgh also had a bad spot coming off a road divisional win. I think the spot probably in San Francisco, Washington is already priced in.
All right, let's talk about a game that doesn't have a big line here. Let's discuss the Thursday nighter between Philadelphia and Carolina. The books that have not gone to 3.5 yet are 3-125 out there. Although Bovada, one of the laggards, they're at -3, -15, which would imply that Carolina is taking out a little bit of sharper money here. Philadelphia may be expected to be the public side, at least according to the bookmakers over at Bovada. This is a really difficult handicap for a few different reasons, because you've got a Carolina team that looked like they were a bit of an overachiever early on in the season, getting off to a 2-1 start. Now the last 2 weeks, Cam Newton looks like the Cam Newton of old, and you want to back that, you want to ride that momentum. But it's a short week now for Cam Newton, and you kind of wonder what his recovery time is with that shoulder injury.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Carolina also, when they were winning, I mean, they won with defense. I mean, they did not look very good with Seg in San Francisco. They were able to get, I think it was 23 points, just because San Francisco's defense was on the field forever. And, you know, they couldn't do anything on offense. So that defense eventually got wore out. And then, of course, winning 9-3 against Buffalo, but Carolina seems to have found some offense. I think maybe that New England defense was kind of the cure-all for them, because they then went and scored 27 at Detroit. So, you know, they've seemingly found something, and I think maybe one of the reasons too that this line is moving a little bit in their favor too is because you've got a couple defensive tackles questionable for Philadelphia, including Fletcher Cox. Didn't seem to hurt him last week against Arizona, but Arizona's a team I think that's really struggling to run the ball. And you know, and that didn't have a mobile quarterback. You know, Carolina, it's a little bit of a different story with, you know, Stewart, assuming he plays, and McCaffrey and those guys, and then plus Cameron Newton being a running threat also as well. So, you know, Carolina's a team that can run the ball a little bit, which Arizona obviously could not. So I think that's the reason you're probably seeing this move. I agree with this move upwards. I haven't played the game, but, you know, I tend to agree with this move. Now, you know, it depends on a number. If a decent enough number comes on Philadelphia, maybe I'll take a shot with them. But the initial move, I agree with here.
I agree with the initial move as well. And honestly, this is one with so much double-digit chalk in the NFL this week. It's one of the rare times I'm thinking about taking the Thursday night game as part of my Super Contest card. And as listeners know, as we've talked about before, you have to have all five plays together before you can play the Thursday nighter. So that's the hardship of trying to do that. But also, not just the defensive injuries for the Eagles, but Lane Johnson not expected to be cleared from concussion protocol with the short week. So the Eagles may be missing their right tackle. Joe Everett mentioned on Monday's show about the problems just that Peters has had at the left tackle position here in terms of trying to protect the quarterback. So you could be looking at a situation here too where Philadelphia is going to have some issues protecting Carson Wentz. And you know, I mean, that's never a good thing when you need to go up against the Panthers offense that all of a sudden seems pretty proficient and pretty productive. So, you know, a lot of things are against Philadelphia here in this spot. Short week, second-year quarterback, going up against a defense that's playing a little bit better that, you know, still has talent at the end of the day. Panthers offense is really getting it rolling. The 3.5 seems light to me. But, you know, this is the NFL. You do have some variance here involved. And, of course, you know, I mean, like I said, the concern for me is Cam Newton in that shoulder. He appears to be healthy. But does the quick turnaround hurt him here and kind of limit, or it's not limit, but sort of cut into the effectiveness he's had the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, that's I think the thing that has kept me from so far playing this game. But you know, I wonder. you know, you kind of wonder a little bit how good Philadelphia is. I think a lot of people, including myself, felt that they were going to be improved. But you know, a couple of their wins have been against bad teams, the Giants, San Diego. They did win in Washington in week one, and they also beat an Arizona team that, you know, doesn't have a bad record, but probably was lucky to be 500 going in. I mean, that's a team that could have easily lost to the 49ers in overtime. That's a team that should have lost to the Colts. The Colts kind of gave them the game at the end, so... You know, you wonder at least early on here if Philadelphia is a paper tiger. You know, Carolina's got two big road wins at New England and Detroit, you know, two teams that, you know, were playoff teams. So, I mean, I think Carolina has maybe proven their mettle so far this season a little bit more than Philadelphia has.
Let's slide down the board here to game 257-258 between the Detroit Lions and the New Orleans Saints. And the Saints, the first team coming out of London, take the bye this year. So they're coming off of a bye week. And I think, you know, and we kind of talked about that a little bit with the teams coming off the bye being heavy favorites this week. We've seen some very good New Orleans team here. This number opened 3.5 at Pinnacle and the Greek. Greek is sitting at 5. Pinnacle is sitting at 6. Once you get through 4, there's really not a whole lot to keep the line from moving up because 5 is mostly a dead number in the NFL. So now we've gotten to 6. We've seen a little bit of a stopping point here at the books that have gotten to that point. But this is a very telling line move, I think, about what the perception is of both of these teams out there.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how much of it is the Matthew Stafford injury. Now it looks like he's listed as probable. You know, I got to think some of that move is based on that. But, you know, Detroit, I think, maybe has some injuries on their offensive line. I think, you know, they had some trouble a little bit on Sunday protecting the passer against Carolina's front four. And, you know, maybe I don't think people maybe don't believe in Detroit. I mean, people forget that they were a dog in week one against Arizona. And, you know, I'm not sure that that folks are convinced in Detroit. I mean, this seems to be a pretty big line move on the Saints, who, you know, some people really liked early. And I mean, I talked to a couple sportsbook managers, and they said they had a lot of people betting Saints futures early in the season. They also were betting Giants futures, which hasn't exactly seemingly worked out to this point. You know, I wonder if this line has moved too much, but I don't know if I'm really excited to get involved with Detroit here, because I think that this is a pretty big move so early in the week.
The hard part for me, I mean, I like New Orleans in this game. I would have taken them in the Super Contest easily at 3.5 or 4. It probably comes out 6 now. At least I would assume it comes out 6. So that's, you know, a pretty tough spot to be in. But, you know, I've talked about the Saints here. They were a team I liked coming into the season. I was a pretty big fan of them. Had them against Minnesota in the Super Contest and against New England. Didn't win either one of those games. And it was one of those situations where, you know, they played an elite defense in week one. They played an elite offense in week two. The next 2 weeks, they played teams that were more on their level or worse than them, and they've beaten them by a combined 54-13. Now they're coming out of the bye. I just feel like, you know, maybe we can kind of not take the first two games out of the equation, but evaluate them in the proper context, because Detroit is a team on par with New Orleans. And when New Orleans has been in that situation this year, they played very well.
Yeah, I mean, they're not quite as good as the elite teams, but there's a lot of, you know, there's a kind of a lot of those middling teams in the NFC, I think, when you look at a team like New Orleans, Detroit, Minnesota, Tampa Bay, the Rams, even though they've started better than I think a lot of people projected. You know, there's a lot of teams kind of in that middle. There are very few teams that maybe you would consider elite. I mean, if you were to really look at who we would think were the elite teams in the NFC, I mean, Green Bay, Seattle still has that perception, even though I'm not necessarily convinced that they're the Seattle of old. But Dallas, even though their record doesn't show it, I mean, I think they're pretty much looked at as the market as one of the elite teams. But yeah, they're all really kind of in that mush there, you know, where you're looking at they could finish anywhere from third seed in the NFC to 10th and being out of the playoffs. And there's a lot of teams like that.
Well, Wes Reynolds, you can follow his work on Twitter at Wes Reynolds, the number one. Thank you so much for joining me this week again, man. I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, thanks for having me. Go Tribe.
Go Tribe indeed. I think it's a pretty good final send-off for the show today. I'm sure there are some Yankees fans that are listening, but you know, at least you can take solace in the fact that if your Yankees do lose tonight, it will be to my Indians. So I don't know what that means for you. And there's one guy in particular who knows I'm talking to him out there. But, hey, we'll see what happens. And, you know, for those that haven't caught my Yankees-Indians preview for tonight's game, make sure that you go ahead and take a look at that. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll hear from Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com, also Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Friday, Westgate Super Contest selection segment. I'll chat with Sports Cheetah about week 6 of the Super Contest, and then also we'll hear from Brent of DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.